Fox Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch does not have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Big show today. Massive show today.
Massive.
Yeah. Landon Ferraro is returning.
He's back from Italy.
Yeah.
He's also busy tonight.
I could use a trip to Italy.
You could?
Yeah.
I think we all could.
Wouldn't it be great for all of us?
Should we do a show trip to Italy?
I don't know what travel agencies are out there, but yeah. 650 station trip to Italy would be great. You know,
I'm so happy I came back for summer.
Yeah, Ben, we can get Elon on the trip. We get Ben, Elon, Josh.
For all the travel operators out there, this sounds like a great idea and a great advertising plan for you.
Canuck Central goes to Italy. Italy, brought to you by, could be you.
I mean, just imagine how insufferable I'd be on a trip to Italy with the rest of the station.
If I get to travel to Italy, I think I'll put up with
it. If any of you try to get a cappuccino after 11 a.m., you're getting the shots.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, that's it. All right. No, let's do it. I'm sure somebody is willing to do it.
Harmon Dial will
sponsor our trip to Italy.
Harmon Dial will join us as well. And we're going to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs and also your Vancouver Canucks. Let's get to it. It's the Open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the Open. Four!
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It's the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And the latest is Abbotsford is getting their Calder Cup Conference Final Series started tonight against the Texas Stars in Abbey at the Abbotsford Center. You'll hear the call later tonight on Sportsnet 650 from Brandon Astle. And I do want to get into that, and we will talk about it more with Landon and Harmon Dial. You know, one of the things, there was a lot after Florida disposed of the Carolina Hurricanes last night in Game 5. Dan Jinxio.
Yeah, he got in your own way. I've never seen it. It was like the Inception version of Jinxio.
Because as soon as I called, look, Sebastian Aho's figured it out, and Carolina's up 2-0. It was all downhill from there for the Carolina Hurricanes, and they lost the series. There was some shenanigans with the handshake line and Paul Maurice and telling Rod Brind'Amour what to do. For me personally, like, I would never want to tell Rod Brind'Amour what to do. The guy scares the living hell out of me.
No, and
that's the difference between me and Paul Maurice.
I don't know if I want to get into it. Like, there are a lot of things I like about Paul Maurice, and there's certain things that make me roll my eyes about Paul Maurice, and that was one of them.
But really, for as much as there's a lot to discuss about Florida going back to a third consecutive final and all of that, you know, the conversation around Carolina to me, and I'm part of it because I have been critical of the way Brind'Amour sets up the team and do they have to evolve a little bit and how they play in order to get over that hump. But, you know, I think sometimes, and Brind'Amour sort of talked about this after the game, like, there's so much negativity around our team, and yet we're here again in the Final Four. Like, to me, that's still an achievement. And in the world of, like, you know, everybody's Ricky Bobby now, you're either first or you're last, I don't think that's realistic, and I don't think that's fair. It's like, yeah, there's things you can talk about with the Hurricanes, and I don't love the way that they play, and I certainly don't agree with everything that they do. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather be a team that's in the dance or close to the dance pretty much every single year, knocking on the door every single year, and trust that as long as we keep doing these things, one of these years we will break the door down and find our way to a cup final or maybe even more. Like, it's funny how Canucks fans and hockey fans all over Twitter last night are just burying the Canes, and it's like, yeah, most teams in the league would much rather be where the Canes are right now than where they currently are.
Well, yeah, of course. At the same time,
I just think that gets lost in translation with how we're talking about the Canes,
like,
right now.
You'd much rather be the Canes than what 60-70% of the league.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, of course, right? The question for me is, can you win with the way Brendan Moore wants your team to play? Mm-hmm. And we saw in critical games, all of a sudden Slavin's minutes went up, but the fact that they're so even, the minutes for a lot of his players, and that's not a bad thing if you have depth, and clearly they've done well because they've gotten far, but are they doing enough to maximize every moment in a hockey game?
At some point, you've got to lean on your stars a little bit more.
Yeah, I think those
maybe their stars aren't as good as other team's stars, and that's...
But I think Jacob Slavin is.
Yeah.
Like, should he not be playing 27, 28 minutes a night in the playoffs?
When it comes to the playoffs, like, yeah, fill your boots, man. Play 23 to 27 minutes a night. If you have to run them hot to 30 minutes a night, then that's what you do. We've seen pretty much every Cup team kind of do that as time goes on. I mean, the greatest example is probably Duncan Keith, right?
Yeah. And also, we talked about the roster construction. They're really good. If you look on spreadsheets, and we even saw analytically, and, you know, this is the point I made when they were the odds, like the heavy favorites, Cup favorites, going into the playoffs, and after the second round, they were the heavy Cup favorites. And I was like, I get it analytically, but they're really not.
There's a disconnect between their analytical profile and reality.
Yeah, and also just how they're viewed from like a betting market standpoint, because a lot of their numbers are so positive. But they have a lot of players, and especially when how their back end is built, that can be taken advantage of in certain plays. We saw with Gostisbehere in a lot of moments, right? And he's a big critical part of your defense. So I do think their roster construction, as good as it's been, there's certain things they have to tweak, but there are tweaks away, man.
Yes.
You know, but is their philosophy going to prevent them? Like, it's twofold to me. The philosophy of how they build their team based on an analytical model, which is fine. Like, you can use analytics, and I'm not saying they're just married to it, you know, strictly, because they do incorporate, obviously, eye tests and legitimate scouting and all those things. But the way they go about building their hockey team and the way Brendan Moore goes about coaching, have they reached their ceiling? Are they willing to make the changes necessary in order to get over that hump and win a Stanley Cup?
I don't think they've reached their ceiling because... there's clearly a big move they've yet to make. And they still have the ammo to go out and do that. Like, that's the thing about Carolina, is they've tried to change their philosophy the last couple of years. They did go out and pay the price for Jake Guentzel, tried to keep him, didn't end up keeping him in free agency. He goes off to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And then they make the play for Rantanen this year, and... You know, maybe you could argue, hey, just keep Rantanen, like, let it play out, see how far it goes. But, like, Rantanen made it very clear to them he wasn't going to play. He wasn't going to play there, and he didn't like the fit. And so it's just like, okay, well, this isn't going to work. It has a better chance of derailing our season, our chances, than it does giving us ultimate success. So they pivot, they get Stankov, and they get an extra couple of picks. And now you can... try again next year, or try again this offseason, where you still have assets, you still have young players, you still have guys coming, versus other teams like Toronto today, who's talking about really taking a look at their DNA, as Brad Treliving put it. And it's like, well, you don't have assets to go out and make trades. You're losing Mitch Marner. You have Carolina's in an infinitely better position than Toronto to keep knocking on the door than the Leafs currently are.
No doubt. But are they going to big brain it?
Yeah.
That's the only question, right? Like, that's my biggest question. And are they
seem more like a team that's tweaking versus Toronto. And, you know, even think back to, you know, the Canucks in the wake of losing the Stanley Cup final, and how much they big brained what it meant losing to the Bruins. And it was like, oh, well, we need to be bigger, tougher. And like, what you did was working. You didn't have to change too much. But.
Yeah, but to me,
teams get themselves in trouble when they try to tweak too much.
Yeah, but at the same, again, I look at their defense.
Or change direction completely almost.
To me, when I look at a defense that has Brent Burns, who's like almost 40 years old, you have Shane Gostisbehere, you have Sean Walker. Like, to me, that's not a winning blue line.
No.
Like, but that to me is more than tweaking. Like, I think they need to do some like real
work. But this
work
was kind of a transition
line.
Year for the Carolina Hurricanes, sure. And they still finished Final Four.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they've got Nikishin, they've got Morrow coming, they've got other guys coming, they've got cap space to go out and get defensemen if they want.
No doubt. I mean, yeah, they got all those positive things, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the point being, if you look at how their blue line is built.
Yeah, I can agree on that. Their blue line wasn't a Stanley Cup level blue line this year.
But, like, what are they going to do next? Like, that's the thing. And I know Kotkaniemi was the guy who was being blamed. And I find it funny. It's so funny how, like, the guy who doesn't play a lot and he takes a bad penalty, everyone just piles on him, right? Everyone was piling on, calling him, you know, the guy, the reason they lost the game and how bad a penalty it was. And it wasn't a great penalty, but
up 2-1 after that, yeah. After that goal.
But was it as bad a penalty as people make it out to be?
It's a
battle. Like, I know he gets a little, like,
yeah,
but he's battling. It's not like he's hooking a guy.
No.
He
puts his arm around him in the offensive zone. So it's not a great penalty.
No, but people make it out to be like he just committed this massive crime and that he should get booted out of Carolina.
Well, part of that, I think, is when the play-by-play crew points out that it's not a great penalty to take, then people just like immediately agree on that. And then
it's not. I get it. But I find like he's becoming the guy that's like, is the scapegoat, it becomes, right? Like,
well, he's already been made the scapegoat by Rod Brind'Amour. So the question is, like, as far as changes go, is Kotkaniemi on the block for the Carolina Hurricanes? It feels like it's heading that way. And is that a player, considering he's a center, that the Canucks could be interested in?
Depends on the price. Like, I'm not paying anything for Kotkaniemi.
Could he be your defensive pivot to play in that middle six role next to Filip Hedl as your more offensively minded centerman behind Elias Pettersson? I think that's something you could look at. And, you know, it's a contract that it's not great. And obviously the term isn't great, but it's not too onerous of a contract. Like, if he's playing third line center for you and he's capable of playing that, then you don't mind the money that he's making.
I don't know. I think it's a pretty bad contract, Reed. Like, the more I think about it, I thought about it, and I'm like, hey, part of it is if I can get him for free versus giving up assets for a Zacha type, hey, maybe I'd rather take Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
But maybe I actually don't, because you have 4 years left at 4.85.
Yeah. For a guy who scores 12 goals a year, 15 goals a year.
Yeah. When he plays like 14 minutes a game, 15 minutes a game.
Yeah.
You're projecting that he's going to become something greater than that.
Yeah.
He got a chance in Montreal, didn't work out. Initially got a chance in Carolina. Now, it could just be that him and Brind'Amour are never going to see eye to eye. He's young enough, but he's going to have to take a pretty big leap. It's going to have to be like the Zacha leap when he took that from New Jersey when he went to Boston.
Yeah.
When he kind of became that player and now he's shown he can do it. That's the bet you're making. But to me, the contract's pretty bad. Like, 4 years at 4.85. Like, to me, I almost want something to take that on.
Yeah. The 4 years is a tough pill to swallow for a guy who, you know, unless there is another breakthrough offensively, is essentially a 30-point guy, 30-ish point guy.
Would you rather have Kotkaniemi at 4.85 or Pius Suter at 4.5?
I'm going to say Kotkaniemi.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because he's tall?
Well, I think there's a better chance that, well, yes, he's tall. Yeah. And there is potential that he could get better. Whereas, like, I think we've just seen the best of Pius Suter. That's my argument. Yeah, it doesn't really go much further than that.
Yeah, because like Kotkaniemi, even on the PK, he's got moments, but he doesn't get trusted on it in a huge way. He doesn't play on the power play. Again, it could be because Carolina doesn't trust them.
Yeah.
Like, but what if all he is just that?
Well,
you know what I mean?
He's just turning 25.
Yeah, he's still young enough.
So there is the
option
that there is still room to grow here.
How much would you want to, like, what would you want in return to make it happen?
I would want it to be pretty free. I wouldn't expect too much coming back the other way, but I would expect it to be basically a free transaction for me.
I'd want at least their third round pick in 2027.
Mm. Okay.
They have an extra pick in that year, a third. Like, I want at least something along those lines.
It's an interesting one on Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Could you get a little bit of something extra? It doesn't seem like that's in Carolina's DNA. I wonder,
but do they want to hold on to him or not?
Yeah. I wonder if there's enough of a, given that he was a third overall pick, there's always like teams that are, yeah, we'll take a chance on that guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'll have to give up something extra.
They might have to make a swap and take something on, though. Like,
they'll have to probably take on a little bit of money.
It's about $20 million that he's owed. It's not insignificant. You know how we talk so much about guys like Garland, how hard they were to move?
And real cash matters, yeah.
Here's a guy who's being benched in the playoffs and, you know, is playing 14 minutes a game.
And now is pretty much on the block. His coach does not seem to be the fondest of him. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Speaking of Connor Garland, he was on Canucks Brunch earlier today with Josh and Lena. He said the Canucks are tough to play against. You agree?
When they're tough to break down.
Okay.
So when they play their best, they're hard to score against. And they do have a big D. He talked about how their defense is big and they're hard to play through. And we have a physical and bigger blue line, and you have Quinn Hughes and you have good goaltending. Like, that's hard to play against. The Canucks aren't physical, but I do think they're a hard team to play against.
When it's hard to break through their structure.
Yeah, and he was saying that when answering the question around the way Adam Foote wants them to play. And he didn't get into any specifics about their system or whatever, but essentially that, hey, they're a pretty hard team to play against last year. It's not about how they're playing. It's just about being better as a team.
Connor Garland was a guest on Canucks Brunch, which you can listen to on podcasts. I think there's almost a disconnect of like what tough to play against means. You know, people seem to think that tough to play against is that, you know, you're getting a glove in your face anytime there's a scrum around the net and getting a lot of hard hits and those kinds of things. And the Canucks aren't necessarily that type of tough to play against.
He mentioned a couple of guys that get in your face, like Sherwood's that type of player. Joshua, when he's on top of his game, is that type of player. Like, they have guys who forecheck well. And when the Canucks are at their best, they contest everything. It's not so much even about being physical, but it's about getting in people's faces or getting in their space. And when the Canucks actually check really well, they do take a lot of sticks away, right? They take time and space away, and that becomes really hard to play games. And that comes back to, you have buy-in from what the coach has. And ultimately, if the Canucks get buy-in, they can be a tough team to play against. But ultimately, it comes down to getting better players. And I just wonder, as much as we're sitting here and talking about the centers and all that, and again, like, I think a guy who can be good defensively matters, I wonder if they're going to be adding some more sandpaper to the forward group. Like, I think they'd love to be, they're trying to be a hard team to play against. Can we also be a more punishing team to play against?
Well, I think everybody is watching Florida and wanting a little bit more of what they've got going on in Sunrise, Florida, given how much success they've had in the postseason. To the playoff central roundup, Panthers advancing to the Stanley Cup final. Six straight cup finals for a Florida team, and everybody's discussing how the tax advantage is too great for teams that are in no income tax states. Again, it's not insignificant. I think there is something there, but you also have to have front offices and ownership groups that are smart enough and good enough to make and give the best advantage for that. I mean, it's not like Florida's been the model of success for the entirety of its existence in the National Hockey League.
I was going to say.
And then there's the Arizona Coyotes, who also are in a no income tax state. And guess what? They don't exist anymore because they suck the entirety of their existence in the National Hockey League. They had to move to Utah. So it's not a blanket statement that being in a no income tax state gives you this great advantage towards success. I think it's more like, it gives you more room for error. And there are some advantages that if you're good enough to take advantage of, then they could help you be a team that builds a dynastic type club that the Florida Panthers have had over the last few years.
I think they went through a stretch where they made the playoffs twice in 20 years or something like that, right? Like through the early 2000s and up until essentially recently.
There was no income tax in Florida during that stretch as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like it's anything that has changed. But I think the point you make that it makes it easier for you to keep a great team intact because everyone can take a little bit less and still make their money.
Yeah.
But as far as attracting players, sure, to some degree, but it's not like outside of signing Bobrovsky. And when they signed Bobrovsky, they were far away from being this team, and they had to pay him $10.5 million to come over.
Yeah, Bobrovsky, I think it's the biggest goalie contract outside of the one Carey Price got.
Yeah, they paid a massive price to get Bobrovsky. So it's not like they were this great team that drew him in with this no income tax as being the big carrot they dangled. Yeah. There was cash they dangled.
And they really didn't have a lot of competition for Bobrovsky. Like, they paid him at the top of the market,
Yeah.
even though he made it pretty clear he would love to play in Florida.
But now that they are a good team, and mm-hmm. they've been able to trade for, they developed some players, they've signed them to good deals, they traded for Reinhardt, they extended him, getting Sam Bennett, if they extend him, like, that's how they're using that to their advantage. They're a good team, people want to stay, and they can find ways to do that.
You know, we saw it in Vancouver. Guys took less to come to the Canucks when it was clear that they were a perennial playoff team and a team that had a chance at winning. You've seen it over the last number of years with the Maple Leafs, where guys have taken less to go play for the Maple Leafs at a chance to win. So this is a blanket thing that happens across the league, where especially guys later in their career that maybe haven't won yet, they will, you know, take less to go into places and go into spots that they feel they've got a good chance of winning. And two, if you have an internal cap that's set really well, and the Panthers have done that with guys like Bobrovsky and Sasha Barkov, the Bruins had it in their heyday with Bergeron and Chara and Marchand all making like six or less,
yeah,
6.5 or less. If you have that setup, then those will be advantages to you. But it's very difficult to get there. And most of the people complaining about the no income tax things, it's really just a projection of their front offices not being good enough to build stronger hockey teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that I think people would like to blame mm-hmm. something. And I find anytime you're at the top, people take away from how you got there too.
Yes.
Oh, you use LTIR. Oh, you have no income tax. You know, like, that's just a byproduct of winning and being the top team. You're going to get picked apart.
There wasn't a lot of people praising them for paying 2 second-round picks for Sam Bennett when they initially traded for him.
Well, initially, when they signed Bobrovsky, that was banned. Yep. Like, you're giving this guy $10.5 million?
Yeah. You guys are nuts. Matthias Ekholm is going to return tonight for the Oilers. Troy Stetcher will come out of the lineup. They look to advance to the Cup Final. Obviously, no Zach Hyman for them, as they will have a little bit of a different forward group look for this one. Marco Rossi no longer on the Flyers' radar because he's too expensive, according to those that cover the Flyers. And apparently the ask from Minnesota was Tyson Forster, who also signed an extension today with the Flyers. And word is that Marco Rossi is looking for a 7x7 contract for his next deal as a restricted free agent going into this summer.
He's coming off a 60-point year. Why wouldn't he?
Back-to-back 20-goal seasons.
Yeah, he's
was a ninth overall pick.
Yeah, young player. Why wouldn't he?
It feels like one of those, like, hey, shoot your shot kind of things. But also, the production isn't too far off from wanting that in today's cap world
no.
as well.
What was interesting, though, it said, you know, they wanted Tyson Forster or one of the late first-round picks. Is a late first-round pick a big price to pay if you like Marco Rossi?
I don't think it is. To me, it's not. So, like, that essentially tells me 15th overall would get it done.
Oh, the Canucks probably were, more than get it done.
Yeah. If the Canucks were to be interested in Marco Rossi.
I know Pignota said the Canucks have some interest. Again, I'd be surprised at this stage, but we'll see. Again, the Canucks don't have a ton of options, right?
Yes.
So how you know, desperate are you?
I don't know if it's desperate, because Marco Rossi's a pretty good player. He just scored 60 points. Brad Treliving saying Mitch Marner's future in Toronto is still unclear, admits Leafs DNA needs to change as well. And there's also been some reporting that the Leafs may try to explore sign and trade type deals. It feels like Marner is on his way out of Toronto, even though Toronto might want to explore keeping the player. We'll get to a couple of more things coming up, but also Landon Ferraro is going to join us on the hotline powered by Power West Industries in just a little bit. And also, I mean, you've been hearing it on the station all day if you've been listening, but we're looking at really pumping up the 50-50 for the Sports at 650 Jays Care. And it's presented by Tile Town, and it's in support of Challenger Baseball. The Jays Care Golf Tournament supporting Challenger Baseball every single summer is something I've participated in a couple of times. I've emceed it a couple of times. And one of the great things about the event, one of the holes, like, you know, when you go to golf tournaments in the summer, there's always like different kinds of setups at every hole, right? One of the holes they have a setup of like what they do at Challenger Baseball. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get to go through some of the things that they do to help kids with disabilities play. And it's really incredible. It's really creative what they do. And, you know, it's amazing to see how they bring the community together and give people that have these difficulties a chance to play sport and build communities yeah. around them and build friends in their communities as well. So if you can support the Sports at 650 Jays Care and the 50-50 event, we very much appreciate it.
Yeah, think of it as like, how much did you enjoy playing youth sports?
Yeah.
And imagine somebody...
Maybe you still carry some of those friends as some of your best friends in life.
Or just the memories, or just being part of it. And imagine somebody who hasn't had the opportunity to do that, and you can help them do that for the first time.
Tickets start at just $10, with bundles available for more chances to win. Grab yours at jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com, or just text MONEY to 650-650 to get the link straight sent to your phone. You must be 19 plus and be in BC to play, and we can do some good together. What we're going to do for this week, and there may be some other things that we do in future weeks to really pump up this 50-50 and get more fundage moving towards the Challenger Baseball and this 50-50 raffle. But for this week, if we get to the $10,000 mark, and we're just about halfway there, if we get to a $10,000 jackpot by the end of Canuck Central tomorrow, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to the Abbotsford Canucks game on Saturday during Canuck Central tomorrow. So this doesn't guarantee you a chance. There's going to be a regular draw on the station if we reach this $10,000 mark, but we will only do this giveaway if we get to the $10,000 mark by the end of Canuck Central tomorrow.
And if you want a chance to get those tickets, then make a donation. And you can be in.
And help it out to get up to that number so we can give away a pair of tickets to see Abby in playoff action come Saturday night. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, Landon Ferraro is going to join us next on Sports at 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.